We'll start this work session. I'm Randy Crispin, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. With me is Commissioners Brian Krosius and Julie Fedorchak. This work session is on two different cases, but they're similar in some ways. They are cases PU-16-775 and PU-17-23. They both have to do with wind farms. 16-775 has to do primarily with lighting. 17-23 has to do with commissioning and reclamation. Also with us from staff at the table are our attorney, Jack Hsu, our engineer, Jerry Lean, and Steve Call is at the desk. And do either of you have opening comments?
I do not.
I do not.
Other than to say that if we aren't wrapped up by about 5-2, I'll need to leave because I have another kind of hard deadline at 11 for an appointment.
Okay, hopefully we will be. I believe that 16-775, my understanding or feeling was that we'd kind of reached consensus and weren't requesting any more changes than what was discussed at the last work session. So I'm not intending to go into that unless anyone else has something to add on that subject on the lighting one.
I'm good with the lighting one.
And so, Jack, I'm ready to move into 17-23. Or Jerry, whoever's kicking it off.
Why don't I kick it off? I know Jerry passed around some general comments, and he started with the summary of the comments that are out there. Just to explain what you have in front of you.
Sorry, Jack. Did you pass around comments to all of us, or you did that previously?
I did not pass.
Oh, you didn't. I apologize.
This is.
That's just for your own reference.
For us, we're going to write an order from these comments.
Okay.
Yep. All right, so what we do have in front of us then is the one copy, and this is what Mr. Hammy went through to put it more in the format for rulemaking, and that has the case number on top of it. Another copy which has a yellow highlighter on it on the top corner, and there were a couple other things that we were moving around, so there was some alternate language I put in that one. So an investment grade as well as I put it all in green, so we can come back to that in a little bit. I tried to make some sort of flow chart to reference to of the three different things that we're going to be kind of following along with in these rules. And then I did just bring a couple of the corporate credit ratings, something that you received, as well as some other information I received regarding defaults of just an issue of credit rating. And to start off then, on 1723, I'll move you to page... should be page 7.
You're in the highlighted version.
I do have a highlighted. I can work off either one.
The pages all the same? Which one are we following along when you say page 7?
The one I handed out was, I guess they are different, aren't they? I didn't realize that. Moved it that much.
If we want to be looking at the alternative language, is there two options? Are both the alternative language and the language from the previous one in the highlighted version?
That is only the alternative language.
So maybe we need to just reference them both and look at it, the one that Hamry put together as the final, and then
sure.
Consider the alternative language for those that have it.
Yeah, we can do that. There are only a couple of small spots.
Yeah. Would that work, Randy?
I don't care which one. I just want to know which one you're talking about.
Let me start with the one John Hamry passed out, and we'll go to 6909. 0906.
Okay.
And that has been changed to prior to operation, if you recall, instead of prior to commencement of construction. And this is for the decommissioning plan.
That looks good to me.
And then on number 2, the commission shall make a determination on the decommissioning plan no later than 60 days after the decommissioning plan is deemed complete by the commission. Okay.
Okay.
And I'll move you down to 690908, the financial assurance section.
0908?
Correct.
Okay.
Number two, that has been changed to operation. It shouldn't. He missed that up.
Remember, commencement of
operation. Yeah.
Prior to operation of the facility, it should say. There's still a typo in that.
Yeah, that it's in the version I gave John, but I think he just mistakenly.
So it should be number two should be prior to the commencement of operation of a facility.
Right, or just operation, either.
Prior to operation.
Oh.
Number four, that's been changed. The commission may allow the owner to provide financial assurance through an incremental bond schedule. To be given consideration, an incremental bond schedule must include an initial bond increment prior to commencement of operation.
Now, this is one, and I almost hate to throw this out here at this time because I've been an advocate for the incremental bond schedule, but I always envisioned it as something that was intended to address the whole the construction issue, which, you know, the fact that during construction you need a smaller bond, which we've already are addressing in another way. So do we want to entertain it? Would we ever approve an incremental bond schedule from operation date to some other time? I mean,
I know the companies would like the opportunity to present the option to have an incremental bond schedule. And if you recall, they'd start off with, I think they were saying something like a 25% in year one, 25% in year five, and then 50% in year 10.
Mm-hmm.
Is and that the point you're making, Julie, or are you talking about beginning that time frame, that timeline when they start construction in case roads are in, parts of it are in, but then for whatever reason, it doesn't work out?
Well, that's what I initially envisioned the incremental bond schedule being, but now we're addressing that in a different way. They're actually going to have a construction assurance that is a separate piece of this. So this incremental bond would, as I'm understanding it, be something that would be part of that plan that we approved, that we have 60 days to approve, and they could say, starting upon operation, we'll have 25% the first 5 years and then 50% for the next 5 years, and then we'll have 100% of the financial assurance in year 10, which I guess, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there as I like it, or I understand, I should say, where it's coming from the standpoint of the businesses saying they have less risk those first 10 years, that they don't think there's a very high likelihood that these are ever going to go upside down. But it also just kind of steps away from the whole notion that if we're going to require financial assurances, we should do it from day one, period. And because they're intended by nature to cover the unexpected.
Part of me wishes this weren't in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think it would be a good idea. It would take a lot of persuading to get me to go along with one of those. I don't know what someone would present that would make me say that's mm-hmm. an acceptable idea. However, we're this far along now, and that's been in there, and I don't know how significant it is to take it out, so I guess I'm okay with leaving it in there as an option for future commissions. But
okay. Brian, do you have thoughts on that one specifically? I mean, your business mindset might lead you one way or another there that could be insightful.
I think I'm just looking at operation versus construction in terms of having that as the trigger point.
There's sort of two different sets of financial assurances here, and right now Jack's been talking about the one that would be required before operation. There, and I assume you're going to get to it after you're done covering this part. There is another part in here that requires financial assurances with a different, simpler formula before commencement of construction.
Correct.
That's still in here.
That's still in here.
Yeah. So this just pertains to the one that would replace the construction part and be required before commencement of operation.
And then the construction bond, whatever it is, we'd be giving back once we had this one in place.
That's correct.
Correct? We have a certain number of days.
60 days after it's in we get a notice that it's in operation. And before they can be in operation, they have to give us financial assurances.
You have to have an approved financial assurance plan, decommissioning plan with financial assurances before they can operate. Okay, well, I'm fine with it, too.
Okay. Move down to 5B1. There was a slight change, and this was in a...
B1?
Yes. Okay. There's a slight change that I put in there. Before, it just had a recent bond issuance, but recognizing that not all companies issue bonds, but which could still have an issuer rating under S&P, Moody, and other rating systems. I just changed it to reflect that, unless there are any concerns about that.
Could we look at the language in under B there, the first sentence? Their owner, apparent guarantor, has or is at least one of the following. There was a comment to remove the words at least. And when addressing comments, could say we removed them.
Well, it has at least, because one of them is in an electric public utility, so you wouldn't be has an electric public utility.
Okay, if you need to leave at least, then we can, but...
You could take out at least. It has or is one.
Right. I see what you're saying, yeah.
At least makes it... What was the comment? I remember that now. It was Molly, wasn't it?
Red Butte...
may require more than one, I think, is what they're...
Suggests something.
Incremental basis and remove of at least from subsection 8.4b.
What was the rationale, Jerry?
I believe that it would probably indicate that we may require more than one of those. So you may feel like in addition to the A category, it could also, you have to have the tangible net worth of $10 million or more.
I think their position was that it didn't add anything to the sentence, and it wasn't clear why it was in there.
Yeah, it can be out.
If we pull it out, that way I can say in the order that we pulled it out.
Mm-hmm. Have you, I didn't realize until yesterday talking to you guys that you have to go through the comments and address every single one of them. And I don't know if Brian and Randy had known that either, that every single comment that somebody makes needs to be addressed in the order. Or how is it an attachment to the order?
I think in the order is...
Findings of fact then or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, to the extent that we address every comment, I don't know, some of them said some stuff about the wind farm. I might try to generalize that a little bit.
Well, and some of them don't pertain to the rules.
Yeah, they're not relevant.
That's... Okay.
So, is there anything else, Jerry, that you point out besides that?
I think that was it on that one.
Okay, because the next two things are, I think, policy discussions then. And since we're on that page right now, why don't we start off with the A category? Or investment grade was something the commissioners were discussing before. And I did bring the corporate credit ratings handout, and I passed that around just so you have that in front of you, you can visualize it. And also, if you look at subsequent pages, I actually shows the default rate of investment grade defaults all the way through. And you can see from 2012 to 2015, there were no investment grade defaults of any organizations. Pretty minimal ones before that. But when I looked at the OSM's requirements, I believe they said the top four credit ratings. So it'd be, I guess that'd be AAA through AA minus on S&P. That's what made them comfortable. And so that is what we ultimately incorporated into our decommissioning rules for financial assurances for self-bonding. I do believe the investment grade, though, that is the industry standard for almost all the contracts.
What does that mean, Jack, that it's for the contracts?
And for, like, PPA contracts, so what makes another company comfortable?
Like, they're not in this regard, though, for decommissioning.
No, different.
Just to invest in it, they're looking for?
But they would look for risk of default.
Okay. And that's the standard that they kind of draw.
They've been comfortable with the investment grade. Yeah, I believe that's overall.
One of the commenters pointed out that MISO goes with investment grade too for its market payments and so forth. That, you know, you're good for it if you got investment grade.
Well, it's my intention to stick with what we're doing with the other industries we regulate, and that we bond and require and take responsibility for reclamation things on. And my desire here is to stay consistent with that and require what OSM requires and what we require in our rules.
And one other thing, too, I just did want to point out, and this is why I brought it out on the second page of the financial handout. When it says default, it doesn't necessarily mean the company goes bankrupt. That just means you went default. Maybe you missed an interest or principal payment. Some of them did file Chapter 11 bankruptcy, too. I have a list of a few of them on this on a subsequent page. You can see Table 2.
Mm-hmm. Is there any parallels at all to the bonding we do of the grain businesses that we regulate? Anything that can be gained from what we require of that industry?
I'm not aware of the standards for that, Commissioner.
I don't know.
I mean, there's no option for self-bonding in that, is there, Randy?
I've never heard it even brought up. I think they all buy a surety bond. And
I believe it's just bonded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just becomes a part of their business, cost of business.
Yeah. I've never heard that brought up of any self-guarantees or anything like that in grain.
Well, they do have, actually, now that we're thinking, there is some options that they have for getting a CD, or they can propose. Remember, we did consider a couple of those by a company. There were some alternative forms of bonding. It wasn't a self, but they could, like, buy a CD and put it in a bank account, you know.
Well, I think they separate. Wanted to, but then we didn't allow them to.
We didn't, but our rules allow for them to entertain it and propose it. Do you have thoughts on this one, Brian?
You know, in theory, investment grade. Now, investment grade is consistent with the other industries.
It's for the Reclamation Division of Mining, it is what we have currently in our rules, our proposed rules, the A rating. However, within probably the general industry standard for wind contracting, MISO, between companies, investment grade is, they believe, is appropriate.
And what about other states decommissioning? Is there any?
This would be higher than other states.
Investment grade is what they accept?
Most commonly, I've seen investment grade, or just have a bond.
My thought is it should be consistent in terms of the standards that we're applying to other industries. You just hate to have two sets of standards out there. That's very simplistic in terms of my thought pattern on it, but that element of fairness and parity in the marketplace, I think, is important.
Well, I have been sort of pushing for the investment grade and exploring that option. And I think it would be okay, but I also have more in the last couple of weeks come around to the idea and the belief that you're protecting from the unexpected, and it's probably more likely that the higher grade rating is going to trigger more bonds. More companies will have to get the bond, and I think that that's an appropriate mechanism to assure that the resources are there for decommissioning, and so I'll support the A rating in these rules, and then we don't have any dissent on that.
All right, I'm going to turn your attention back to I think it's page 9, the 6909-0981. And this is with regards to the construction financial assurances. Right now it's said that prior to commencement of construction of a facility, the owner shall provide financial assurance equal to 10% of the estimated cost of construction of the facility. Jerry and I were talking about this a little bit, and I just wanted to make sure that this was what the commission believed was appropriate. With how it is right now, and I did go back and listen to last work session, and this is how the commission was discussing it. This, in some circumstances, will likely be much more than the cost of decommissioning. So if there of you were planning on having a step-up approach, then probably this wouldn't be the appropriate.
You mean by that, like a lower bond for construction and then a higher bond for operation, recognizing that the investment is huger and the cost for decommissioning are much more?
And Jerry and I ran the average cost of decommissioning per turbine, and I believe it came out to $118,000 for the facilities that we looked at. And so one thing I was just going to on the alternate copy that I handed out, it says, prior to commencement of construction facility, the owner shall provide $100,000 per turbine.
Which page, Jack?
That's on the
yellow one, yeah.
That would be on the yellow one. On page nine
on that too.
So I just put that in there just so the commission could discuss it.
I see the 10%. Am I looking at the wrong copy?
It's the one with the yellow mark on top. Here. I believe I handed it out.
Page nine.
So. It's in green.
What can you explain to me again what you said you and Jerry did, the average what average?
So we did an average cost of decommissioning of the wind facilities that we've been looking at,
mm-hmm.
and then we put it down to per turbine, and it was $118,000, give or take a couple thousand here or there.
And that came from that spreadsheet I handed out before.
Yep.
So can refresh me on, you know, a couple of our more recent applications. When you look at the overall estimated cost of a wind farm divided by their turbine numbers, about what is it averaging the construction cost of the farm?
We've been running for a project, you know, usually in the neighborhood of $250 million to a little more. It depends on how many turbines and how big, how many megawatts they are.
But how many?
I think we've been getting into the neighborhood of, on a turbine cost, about $1.6 million per megawatt. For actual turbine costs. So if you're using the 2-megawatt turbine, That would put you in the neighborhood of a $3 million for that turbine, or maybe a little over that. So 10% of $3 million would be, what, $300,000?
Per turbine.
I will say this, that the chart that you looked at, that had all those old ones, I think a lot of those old ones that I looked at some time ago when we were looking at wind farms that were coming up on 10 years old are completely unrealistic, where some wind farm operators have said, as I recall, there were some around $40,000 or $45,000 per turbine. Just instinctively, I don't think it's even realistic. I will point out that the most recent one that I seen that estimated their decommissioning costs actually had it done by a company that actually puts up wind turbines and had some basis to it. And I think that one was more around in the upper $200,000 range, not far from $300,000. Which is probably pretty close to the 10%.
And that one was at 9.9 some percentage was the way it came out.
Yeah, so
that was the highest one that we had.
But it's the only one that we have any background on where they came up with it. These other ones are just, well, here's what we think it'll be. And when you compare them, I think a lot of those are clearly lowballed.
That
I'm
seems
okay
like
with some less than 10% even, you know, something less than what the ultimate operation will be, but not $100,000 on that.
See, and I don't know, on this one I think that we have to look at it's for construction. So if the company is going to be obligated to have a bond in place or financial assurances to cover the entire cost of, or a large majority of it, of the entire turbine removal, as it would be as if it was completely constructed, then kind of defies the purpose of having a construction bond. To me, you're going to be having some resources in place to recover some of the lesser situations like roads or, you know, some of these projects that might have been, if they do get abandoned when they did some construction for securing the PTC or something of that nature. I think that that's the whole point of it. So if 100,000 isn't enough, then, you know, 150 or something, but I don't think that we should be requiring them to have, you know, the 10% of the full 10% of $250 million, $25 million. That's a lot of money to have for a construction bond.
Well, let me throw this out. Using Jerry's, you know, general math that we just went through, so around 300,000 or $3 million per turbine to build. So 10% being 300,000, that being pretty close to that last estimate. What if we did 5% or 6%? On that math, that would get us down to $150,000 or $60,000 or $70,000. That would, using a percentage model, would allow for, you know, something a little additional on situations where, as these continue to grow, which I expect they will, they'll probably be fewer turbines but larger and more cost involved to them. And
6% of what?
Of their construction costs.
So that would be?
I said 5 or 6. So if 5% would be 150,000. So what, 6%, I guess, would be 180,000.
Per turbine?
Yeah, and no, stay with the percentage model but lower the percent.
I think of the whole construction cost. Not per
the whole construction cost, yeah.
Well, that doesn't equate. It doesn't seem like to me, maybe, and we're just doing math on the fly, but if the whole construction cost is $250,000 or $250 million, then 10% is $25 million and 5% $12.5 million. It's a heck of a lot more than than, you know, 60,000 per turbine or 100,000 per turbine or 150,000 per turbine. So we had to decide, are we going construction costs or per turbine removal costs, a percentage of that? I mean, what's the formula for getting to the end?
I think either approach would work. I just think that having one of those two are probably appropriate because it'll allow us to have something that's easily ascertainable ahead of time and it'll prevent us from slowing down the company during that phase.
Let them move on with construction.
Yeah, just move on and get going and put it in.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the Wanzek proposal for that Courtney wind farm because I noted that too. And the total that I see, and that includes transmission lines and everything, is 28.4 million. So 28.5 million, say. And how many megawatts is that one, Jerry? Total? 200, looks like here, sorry.
This is AmeriCourt, right?
Courtney.
Courtney. Yeah, was it 200?
200. 100. 200, sorry.
200, I think.
But isn't the, to do it if it's on a, aren't we always talking about per turbine, not per megawatt?
We had been thinking more per turbine.
Right. Well, I'm just thinking if we can take the...
I don't think it matters as long as we get a number.
Right. And the 10% is a number that we received in comments, too. So if we did go 5, I think that would probably be a compromising position.
I think so much of the amount goes back to, and I know it's addressed at least to some extent with number 9 on page 11, but $118,000, if that's the average cost today, or, you know, I think it becomes a question as well, how often do we want to go back to this as a commission and say, well, due to inflation over the lifespan of that wind farm, if it's 25 years, if it's 30 years, how often do we want to go back to these companies and require additional financial assurance to make sure that there is enough to take the towers down? $118,000 today could easily be $250,000 to $300,000 in 30 years. So then we've got to circle back, how often does that now become an, you know, at what point is it 10 years from now it's no longer enough? Is it 12 years? And maybe that's not an incredibly big issue, but, you know, just so we're aware.
How long it takes us to do a rule pack.
So, you know, it's going to be a moving number. It's very unlikely to go down, very likely to go up over the course of time.
And I did have a thought, too, if we're doing it per turbine, at the beginning, well, they should know how many turbines they got when construction starts. Never mind. Sometimes they don't know when we're siting it how many turbines are going to be, for sure. But
well, simplicity's sake would suggest that the total construction cost figure, which they seem to have from day one, an estimate, might be the easiest way to go, a percentage of that, and that would naturally grow over time. So
would also prevent people from over exaggerating how much their project is worth to the state and wanting to blow it out of proportion.
5% still seems to me high, but
it's a fairly,
because
short
there bond. Just isn't going to be that much time that this is out there at risk. And and then they're going to be required to have the full thing in operation. So,
and
I guess
if I could, realistically, this thing's not going to be abandoned after they start putting up turbines. There's just too much money.
Yeah.
So if it's going to get abandoned, it'll be when they just got some roads or something done, and those would be a little cheaper to get rid of than there might be some bases that are there that cost money to get out.
The base removal wasn't as much as I expected based on the swing.
The base removal, you know, depends how far down they go, but I'm thinking, if I'm remembering a number, it was a few tens of thousands for one, or less than, or 10,000, something like that. What's Wanzig say there?
Foundation pedestal removal to 4 foot depth, 100 of them. Unit price, $7,600.
Okay.
Yeah, so less than $1 million for them to remove all the bases.
Remove, modify.
Excuse me?
Modify, since a chunk is still, or is it just the pedestal?
Yeah, for what we're requiring. Right. Yeah, for what we're requiring for removal.
But, you know, bases aren't really put in until they're pretty serious.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking if it's going to get abandoned, it will happen before they get serious about the construction.
What kind of comments did we have on this? What were they advocating for? I can't remember.
Or
from the industry and others, what kind of comments were they advocating for in terms of the construction bond? Did anyone strongly object to the 10%?
Well, that wasn't in the rules at the proposed rules at the time. That was actually in the comments.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have a construction. Before, it was just fully bonded.
Okay, but
prior to construction.
Since we've been talking about 10%, have we heard a lot of objection?
I've only spoken with a few different, like three or four companies and people within the industry with regards to that, and I think they feel that it's high. However, I think ultimately having something set and stable that they know going forward that they can just provide to us instead of having to give a decommissioning plan ahead of time is beneficial to them. I also think probably the short period of time between construction and operation, it's of such a short time that I imagine the cost isn't going to be overwhelming, even at 10%. But I think the other thing I heard was that in the comments, Jerry, or was that, did I get that in conversation, that $60,000 per turbine and the 10% of the total construction cost were the two that I recall off the top of my head?
You mean that they suggested?
That they suggested.
It's a huge difference.
Absolutely.
I will say this. You know, the original proposal that people, that was put out for the public to see and to comment on was full decommissioning costs before commencement of construction. Then we've pulled that back down to 10% of construction costs to make it simpler for the constructing industry. But as it turns out by the math, dollar-wise, that maybe isn't much different.
Right.
And so now we're talking about cutting that in half. We go much further than that if we go to 5%. We go much further than that. We almost have to probably open it back up for hearing again because we're down to significantly different type of financial assurances during the construction period than what we put out in our original proposal.
Commissioner, if you recall, though, our prior rules have no financial assurances up to 10 years. And so even if we do fall in that middle ground, that's not, it's less than what we've already requested.
You're saying it's not a substantial enough change to
from
trigger.
10 years, yeah, it would. I don't believe that's such a substantial change at that point in time. I mean, as a concept.
Well, I don't know. Just to move things along, I think 4 or 5%, I think, would be fair. And people didn't seem to have a huge problem with the 10, so that they shouldn't have a problem with the 4 or the 5.
I'm okay with certainly cutting it down from 10 because it does sound like that's going to be about the same thing.
Right, that's not much of a...
I had said 5 or 6. Where are you at on it, Brian?
I think I'd want to take just a closer look at the cost of construction and how it breaks down versus, the cost of turbines and the equipment costs themselves from conversations I had of... have been getting more reasonable, or maybe not reasonable is the word, but they've been coming down. How much they've been coming down and how much it costs to actually physically, you know, move the cranes in, rent the equipment, et cetera. So I think you have to look at construction costs to some extent, but like I said, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10.
But just remember, this is just for the construction phase.
Right.
This isn't,
right.
Not, this isn't for the whole decommissioning, which, you know, is more likely to require the bringing in the cranes. And that's sort of where you guys came up with your average, because we have those plans that have been provided and some estimates like you're looking at for all the different phases of construction that's included in those plans that have been filed for existing facilities. So if we're doing, do you want to look at that more for the construction bond still, or are you saying you want to consider that more for the other one, for the permanent bond?
Well, both to some extent, but more for the permanent in terms of what that number lands at.
Commissioner, you'd have an opportunity to do that at the when they actually give us a decommissioning plan.
Yeah, that one we will have plans submitted to us by a professional engineer.
Okay. So we aren't setting a number for that now, for what we're going to require them to.
For the operational decommissioning plan? Nope, that will depend on each project.
Yep, so then you'll get something like this, which pulls it all together, and then we can say, we think you're short here, there, the other, and make them tweak it accordingly.
Okay.
So really the question right now is for this initial phase, when we want to set a percentage.
And we wanted some kind of simple rule.
A formula.
So they can start construction.
So it sounds like five is a consensus number, generally speaking.
Big change from 10, but I'm good with that.
And I'd rather see 3 or 4, but I'm good with it too.
Okay. 6.24.
Were there other major things in here?
Those are the two things that were discussed in the last work session. So unless there is anything additional from the commissioners.
Dare we say we're done?
No, I have one thing. I don't think it's very complicated. Jack, what page was that thing about significant construction? Do we need to address that, or is that?
We can.
Have you thought more about that?
That should be under the, I think, under the 6909-0903. I'd imagine it is. So it'd be number
page four.
Number four with no significant construction, Commissioner Christman. Just looking at putting in there.
Yeah, I don't want to leave something where.
Am I looking at the right thing? Page four, bottom number four.
The very last line. Yep.
Okay.
So no significant construction.
A period of 24 consecutive months has passed with no construction. I don't want to leave a situation where someone can go out and turn over a shovel full of dirt and say, "Well, we worked on a little bit." And I don't know if significant is the right word, but that's what came to my mind.
So. Something like that.
Do you want to put significance in two places?
Where?
The reason I ask is that if you look at the Antelope Hills project here, they started doing some roads. I guess, never mind. But they did start doing some roads 2 years ago. And so they started construction. And under this rule, they would now be abandoned unless they file a rebuttal saying that they don't plan to abandon it. So it occurred to me that maybe the 24 months could be extended.
They can file for an extension.
Or else we could just put it at...
What would you add to fix that?
Well...
36 months?
If you wanted to make it 36 months or 48 months, I don't know. You know, Glacier Ridge did the same thing. And they're not going to start for a while.
Well, there is number five, though. That's a grayed out. Yep. Presumption can be rebutted by filing a plan for approval.
Yeah. I think
we're good,
covered.
Jerry. Okay. And you know what? In those cases, it wouldn't be bad to have a conversation with the company saying, okay, what's going on? You know, it's been 3 years. You started some construction. What's the status? So those kind of conversations would be triggered by that.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Okay.
I'm going to scoot.
I think we're done, right? Anything else, Commissioner?
Nope.
Okay. This work session is completed.